Welcome to the Sex Talk podcast, where sex educators talk about their sex education. I'm Jamie, and my guest today is sex and culture critic Ella Dawson. Ella's writing about herpes, sexual violence, and abusive relationships is incredibly powerful, and her debut novel, But How Are You, Really?, is coming out next year.
Can you talk about what the sex ed you received in school was like?
Sure. So I grew up in Connecticut, which is a pretty liberal state in the United States, but it has some kind of colonial Puritan roots. So even though its politics are pretty progressive, its schooling is not.
Yeah.
And it was not religious. I went to a public school, but we still received abstinence-only education. And I was in high school between 2007 and 2010, 2006 to 2010. So Bush years, coming into the Obama years. So abstinence was still king. And so I didn't really learn anything beyond don't have sex. I remember getting a video in sex ed class that discussed different forms of contraception and condom usage, but it wasn't instructive. It was just like, these are options, but they fail too. And for my senior year, we had to do a research project for, they called it wellness class. And sex ed was like one of the units. And so for my wellness project, I did a research project about how abstinence-only sex education failed statistically, which my teacher did not enjoy me doing. And
I
brought a bunch of statistics and I tried to give out condoms because I had volunteered for Planned Parenthood and they gave me like a case of 400 condoms. And the teacher made me recollect the condoms and threatened to suspend me. So I just told everyone my locker is in the theater wing. The door is always open to my locker. Just take all the condoms you want in your lunch break. So I educated myself about sex.
Definitely. How did you get involved in volunteering for Planned Parenthood?
My parents were very interested in sex education and raising me to feel very empowered about my body. They both had parents who had given them complicated messaging. My mom's mother was a Planned Parenthood volunteer, so it was something that was, it was a value that was very important to her, like bodily autonomy. And then my dad's parents had had him when they were very young. And my grandmother was actually, my dad's side of the family's English, and my grandmother was kicked out of university when she got pregnant with him. So it's it was something that I grew up around, not even realizing it was a stigmatizing or controversial subject. And so I just took like a very natural interest in it. And when I was in high school, I read Jessica Valenti's work. I read The Purity Myth, especially, which was about abstinence culture in the United States, and became kind of a baby radicalized feminist. And it was only natural to reach out to Planned Parenthood and say, like, what can I do? I'm underage. So they put me to work in their legislative office, just like compiling research information of, can you come up with a list of all of the rabbis in New Haven who we might reach out to for stuff, like things like that. And then when I turned 18, I started to work in the medical clinics, which was very eye-opening and rewarding, and whole other conversation.
Yeah, I can imagine. And that's really cool that you had parents who raised you with those values and like you had the opportunity to like follow that. And yeah, I can absolutely see you being the kind of person who would get kicked out of school. Well, I mean, I've read quite a lot of your work, so I can absolutely see you being the kind of person who get kicked out of school for like bringing in condoms and offering them to your peers.
I was a huge nerd, but I did break some rules.
So where did you get your information about like sex from? Clearly not from school, but like, was it from what you were reading, or was that more like theory, like academic feminist queer theory? Where was the actual knowledge about sex coming from?
Yeah, I think I did a lot of, honestly, I read a lot of fan fiction as a young teenager.
Me too.
Yes. And so I learned a lot of basics about sex and what it was and like, what did gay sex look like? Like I learned a lot of that from other horny teenagers who were writing fan fiction. In terms of practical information, I was very lucky to stumble across Bust and Bitch magazine that were still in print at the time. And so that kind of brought me to a lot of feminist theory and a lot of resources. I think through them, I found Scarlatine, and I was able to cobble together some basics. And thankfully, I was able to ask my parents questions, specifically my mom, of like, I want condoms. Like, how do I get them? And she was like, I'll buy some for you. Like, thankfully, I had that dynamic with her, which was really nice. But I think it wasn't really until college that I started to learn, like, beyond the just 101. Uh-huh. My college dorm had dental dams stocked in the bathrooms, which was great. I still don't know if anybody was using them, but I learned what they were. And then I kind of, I as an academic, studied a lot of STI stigma and the history of the HIV movement, issue and then movement. And then when I got diagnosed with herpes as a junior in university, I I learned even more.
Yeah, you got some firsthand experience there.
Yes, in the field research.
You got diagnosed with herpes, and you were writing publicly about that, and the world sort of wanted to paint you as like this like innocent girl from Connecticut, and yet you had like been studying, you know, volunteering at Planned Parenthood and like studying HIV, and like, am I right that you were like the editor of your campus's feminist porn magazine?
Yes, it was the art and sexuality magazine, but it was essentially pretentious porn. Yeah,
that's really brilliant. How how did that impact sort of like how you went on to talk about sex? Was it frustrating that people wanted to like put you in this role of like this like good girl when that wasn't like your full identity?
It was very strange. I think something that I had already struggled with before herpes was the idea of the virgin whore dichotomy. And I understood it kind of as the girlfriend slut dichotomy. Like, I was in high school, I was never anybody's girlfriend. I was the girl that they wanted to fool around with in secret. And so I kind of internalized this mentality of, well, if I'm going to be a slut, I'm going to be the coolest, most informed, progressive slut in the world. And I was very interested in slut shaming and reclaiming that. And that was kind of my mental state. And then when I went to college and started studying sexuality and running the school sex magazine, like, I kind of doubled down on that of like, I'm really interested in hookup culture and I'm interested in slut shaming and these dynamics. And it was so it was very weird for me when I started to write more about herpes and the internet cast me as this like sweetheart who got it from a boy she really loved and was dating, which was true. He was like it was a short-lived relationship, but I adored him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter how you get herpes. And it felt very strange to have this, like, I think I was like the acceptable girl next door, and the story that was interesting to journalists and not so journalist tabloid folks was the idea that herpes can happen to anyone, even this like adorable little sweetheart. And in some ways I was like, great, I'm not being slut shamed by the internet. I was so worried that the internet would, and that like New York Post or the Daily Mail would be like, this hoe is reclaiming herpes. And that backlash did eventually come from more conservative websites, but it was very confusing and weird. And at first I was relieved, but as time went on, I felt very flattened because I wanted to be writing erotica and I wanted to continue to research feminist pornography and all these things. And I was also working full time for a media organization as a social media person. So in some ways it was good that my coworkers were reading like, oh, she has herpes and she's normal. And I wasn't worried about getting judged at work in the same way, but I was very torn, and it's something that I've continued to struggle with as time has gone on, because I wound up in a relationship years later that was pretty emotionally tricky and toxic. And the narrative within the relationship was very much like, oh, you were kind of like this foolish young girl who started doing herpes activism, and isn't that sweet? But like, you're an adult now and you have a normal job and all of that is in the past. And I did not feel encouraged in writing about sex or relationships or, God forbid, writing graphic adult content. So it's like, it's been whiplash for the last two decades of like, are you a slut? Are you respectable? What is the situation? It's very confusing.
Yeah.
It's you're always one or the other, and you always lose, is what I've found, especially being a cis woman and someone who like codes as straight. Like, it's such a trap no matter where you are.
You had obviously like probably more information than the average college student about like STIs. Was it still a surprise to you that there were things you didn't know when you got your diagnosis?
Oh, yeah. And I think because I thought I was so informed, it was shocking to me. Like, I went to Wesleyan University, which was one of, like, for a long time, I think the Daily Beast did a ranking of, like, the horniest schools in the United States. And Wesleyan was, like, always number one or number two. Like, it was a school that prided itself on being sex positive. And there was, like, a student organization that did sex ed resources. There was testing at the school center. Like, I thought I knew everything, and I also thought that would protect me, when in reality, I didn't know jack shit about how herpes was transmitted. It's not prevented by condoms, although that can lessen the risk. It's very common to have oral to vaginal transmission or oral to genital transmission. Like, I just had no idea, and that false sense of security I had made it even more jarring to be like, excuse me? And yeah. It made it very strange to then realize, like, first of all, I've been ignorant all along, but so are all these thousands of people I go to school with who think that they're very informed, but might make a herpes joke in front of me. And yet they are so progressive, they don't realize that they're perpetuating bigotry to ignorance.
Do you think that, like, going back to your, like, 18-year-old self, offering your class free condoms, do you feel like it would make sense to her where you are now? Because I feel like you've done a lot of work in like social media and like more like, as you say, like quote unquote respectable jobs. So like, mm-hmm. How do you feel about where you've ended up? Like,
it's funny, I've been thinking about getting a tattoo, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about. And what I've been playing with is just like, she would be proud, because I've been asking myself that question a lot of like, I just turned 31. I'm starting to think about, what do I want my life to look like? Does it look the way I've always wanted? And I really do think when I go back to my 18-year-old self or my 22-year-old self when I graduated from college, I would be so proud, and it would make so much sense what I'm doing. I've always been very interested and passionate in sexuality. I've always been a writer. I've always been interested in like fighting the good fight, even when it makes people uncomfortable. I think that the specifics would probably surprise me. Never saw herpes being part of the plan. I would not be surprised that I wrote a romance novel, but I might be surprised that it's a queer romance novel with a bisexual heroine. Certainly abuse and sexual assault was never part of the plan, so I might be like, oh, a lot of your work is more depressing than I thought. But I think that my values have not changed, and I think I would be really I would not be surprised. I'd be very proud. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey. I think the more traditional, respectable jobs I've had, that's where I would be surprised, because social media did not exist in the way that it does now when I was younger. So that would be like, what's Twitter? But, or what's X? But I think that the more respectable, quote unquote, jobs I've had have been further from my values. And that might be a moment where 18-year-old me would be like, you went to the TED conference? Like, those are the moments where I think I might have hesitation. And that's been a really helpful grounding thought for me of just like, there are moments where I feel a lot of doubt. But as I try to honor my inner child, I also have to honor my inner teen who was like, yeah. No, this is what I care about. And the world is fucked up. And I hope that I'm a part of making it better, even if it sometimes is embarrassing for my parents.
Were there any myths about sex that you've had to like unlearn as an adult? We've already talked about herpes, but like what things was 22-year-old Ella very confident in that you've now had to like unlearn since then?
Yeah, I mean, darker turn, learning more about sexual coercion and the different forms that sexual assault can take has been a big thing. When I was in college, there was a huge conversation going on about rape on campus and like acquaintance rape and date rape, which are very antiquated terms. But like the idea, like I understood that rape was very complicated and could take many forms. I didn't really understand what that looked like within relationships. and the idea of like your ability to consent at all being kind of warped by an abusive dynamic in a relationship. And that's something that I had to kind of experience firsthand and then spend years in therapy working through in order to realize what that meant and how nuanced it was. And there's an author, there's a journalist who I really admire, Frankie de la Cretaz, thank you. They wrote a fascinating article a long time ago about not wanting to have sex with their then husband and like compulsory sex within marriages. And I remember it being this, like, they got so much backlash for it, but it was such a message that I needed to hear. And that's been like, I think we still have such poor understanding of that. And even with conversations about Me Too, even with conversations about consent evolving, like the very idea that consent can be empty or warped out of someone. And I think that's incredibly scary for folks because it doesn't fit within a justice framework. Like you can't, like my ex was furious at the idea that he might be a rapist when I had always said yes and seemed consenting. And it's like, that's, I'm not, I never called him a rapist because I'm not, I don't think that's, those terms don't work. It's so much more complicated than that. So that's something that I am still clearly trying to find language around because it's so complicated. But it is so important and it has such a severe impact on people's mental health and creates very real trauma. So I wish 22-year-old Ella would never have to learn about it. But I hope that in writing about it, I'm helping other young folks at least be aware of it in case it happens to them.
Yeah, and that's definitely a level of nuance. We have got a little bit better at talking about consent. We have not reached the level of nuance which are actually required for conversations about consent.
Yes.
Hannah Witton talked about this in when she was trying to conceive, like she was having sex and like, well, definitely consenting to sex with her husband, but it wasn't necessarily like enthusiastic consent because she was like not enthusiastic at it. They were doing it because they wanted to get pregnant and she was in her fertile window. Like that is such an interesting nuance there. And again, all of these things are so, we need to be having these kinds of conversations. And yet there are people on the internet who are not ready for these kinds of conversations because they're still not mastering the 101 level stuff yet.
Yes. And they're so threatened by it because they immediately assume this black and white thinking of, well, then there's a villain involved. And it's like, that's not, that framework is not how we get to everyone having sexual experiences that are comfortable, even if they're not enthusiastic.
Yeah. Is there any sex ed advice that you wish you could go back and like give to 18-year-old Ella? Like if you give one thing to like empower her to take on sort of like her university experience, what would that be?
That's a good question. I definitely wish I had understood that very much in my university years, there was this binary thinking, and I think it's still probably true, this hookup culture thinking of you're either dating or you're hooking up, and like you're either not catching feelings or like you are either having casual sex that is pure, that is unemotional, no strings attached, and if you have feelings about it, you're weak and that's bad and you've failed, or you're in love and you're on a commitment track. And I really wish I could go back and tell myself, like, that's all silly. That's all very silly. Like, any sexual or romantic encounter you have is its own unique little snowflake, and you can't really know how you're going to feel. You can't really know because every person is different, and every person you hook up with is different. And like, I certainly didn't catch feelings for Sam, the cross country runner who I hooked up with when I was a sophomore. But I had the exact same type of one night stand with James a few months later, who I had like a huge crush on afterward. Like, you are not failing for having human reactions to things, and you are allowed to change what you want and what you're looking for as you go. And it has no reflection on whether or not you are strong or weak or too feminine for like being a girl who can't have casual sex. Like that is all silly. Like honor what you're feeling and respect it and listen to yourself. And it might be that the person you're involved with or thinking about doesn't feel the same way, and that's you got to deal with that accordingly, but that doesn't mean that you've messed up either. So just be kind to your little heart, because it's very confusing being a human being.
It really is. Would you like to plug where people can find you and your writing?
Sure, yeah. You can find me on any social media platform as @brosandpros, because I, in the past at least, have written a lot of prose about bros. You can also just search Ella Dawson. The best place to read my work and stay in contact with me or up to date about what I'm working on and my book is on Patreon, patreon.com/brosandpros, where I write about sex and relationships and trauma and feminism and all that jazz each week.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.